Hello, O'Brien.
Hello, Mr. O'Brien. It's Lil.
Yes, Lillian.
Are you far from the office?
I'm on the QEW near Kipling.
Because there's a client here. It's Andy Cooper.
Well, I thought he was in the slammer.
He's out on parole.
What's he want with us?
He'd like you to investigate a murder.
Well, can't Bellinger handle it?
Mr. Bellinger's not in his office.
All right, well, I'll be there in about 20 minutes. He can wait for me if he feels like it. But by the way, Lillian, who got rubbed out?
His brother.
Class, please. This morning, we'll begin the first of three periods devoted to the mystery novel, a form of writing to which I personally am especially partial. Now, why the unfailing success of this literary genre which captures the attention of all the social classes?
Professor Bradford?
Yes, McAllister.
Isn't it just because it appeals to our simple, ordinary curiosity?
Ah, but isn't our simple, ordinary curiosity the most powerful of intellectual motivations? What killed the cat? Now, if you want to rivet a man's attention, ask only, who done it?
He's in your office, Mr. O'Brien.
Thanks, Lenny. I'll see him now. Oh, Andy.
Hi, Mr. O'Brien.
Sit down. Hey, you got out on parole.
That's right.
What was it this time?
Stolen property. A bum rap. I was railroaded.
Yeah, sure.
I got off on good behavior.
Now, if you behaved outside the way you behave inside, you'd never be inside in the first place. Right. So what can I do for you?
Somebody iced my brother.
Fred. Oh, yeah, I remember. About 6 months ago. Well, we were all pretty badly cut up about it, as you can imagine.
I know you couldn't care less, Mr. O'Brien, but I'm not here looking for a wreath. I'm hiring you to find out who did it.
You're not hiring anybody yet. We're just at the talking stage. Besides, homicide closed the case.
What do you mean, closed it? They never opened it.
The word is, it was a mob job.
Well, the word is wrong. There wasn't any contract out on Fred. I got that straight from the horse's mouth.
You sure you weren't talking to the wrong end?
Fred was going straight.
Fred going straight? Fred has a record as long as a hippie's ponytail. Assault, rape, dealing in drugs, pimping, come on.
That rape charge never stuck, Mr. O'Brien. Besides, I'm telling you, he was going straight. He married into Brad a couple of years back.
Oh, yeah, I remember. It was quite a coup for a cheap hood like Fred, wasn't it? Moved right up there where the real people lived, didn't he? I always wondered how he swung that.
Fred had a way with the chicks. Will you look into it for me, Mr. O'Brien?
Why should I? This world is a better place without Fred.
It was my brother.
Oh, hand me a tissue. You're breaking my heart.
I mean, maybe I'm next.
Could be. Why don't you go to the police? They're free.
Me? Go to the fuzz? I can hear them laughing now. Besides, like you say, they closed the case. Oh, come on, Mr. O'Brien. Say you will, okay?
All right, Andy. I'll give it a quick once over. I'll even make you a special price.
You will?
Yeah, double the usual rate. That'll be two bills a day plus expenses. You got that kind of scratch?
Jeez, you're a hard man, Mr. O'Brien.
That I am. You'll do well to remember it.
Mr. Bellinger?
Hi, Lil.
You're still trying to beat these machines, Mr. Bellinger. Don't you know they're fixed?
That's where you're wrong, Lil. I just hit the jackpot.
Mr. O'Brien sent me.
What's up?
He wants you to borrow homicide's file on Fred Cooper. His brother's a new client of ours.
Andy, is he out? I'll see what I can do. You know, Briggs isn't too dazzled by the idea of letting us see police files.
Mr. O'Brien was hoping you might be able to charm it out of Eileen like you always do.
I should remind O'Brien that Eileen works for the department, not us. But if charm's called for, better me than O'Brien. It's a nice little skirt you got on.
Thank you.
Too long, though.
Too long? It's only... Oh, Mr. Bellinger, you probably think girls should go around in bikinis all the time.
I do.
I'll tell Mr. O'Brien you've gone over to homicide.
Okay, beautiful.
Professor Bradford?
Yes, McAllister.
In your opinion, sir, is the perfect murder actually possible?
Well, you mean is it possible to commit murder and get away with it?
Yes.
Well, that depends on whether you mean murder in fact or murder in fiction. If in fiction, I think the answer is no.
What about in fact?
Well, that's quite a different proposition. In reality, the perfect murder is the easiest thing in the world to commit. You pick a total stranger on a deserted street in the dark of night, you put a bullet through his heart, and you drive off. It's as simple as that. There being nothing to connect you with the victim in life or in death. Detection is therefore virtually impossible. You simply make your murder senseless, pointless, and useless, and you have a perfect crime.
Mr. Bellinger's back, Mr. O'Brien.
Hi, O'Brien.
You get the file, Bellinger?
Listen, what's with this Cooper case? I practically had to propose to Eileen to pry her loose from it.
Well, maybe you're losing your touch. But you got the file, huh?
Listen, I'm serious. I really ran into opposition. She says if Briggs finds out, she'll get fired.
Well, she won't need the job once you're married, will she? Now, is that the file?
It has to be back in the gray cabinet before 2.
In that case, you better skip over and have it copied, Lillian.
I'll go right away.
What's that?
A cassette recording.
What cassette recording?
I don't know. It's part of the Cooper file.
Will that fit your office machine, Lillian?
I think so. It's a standard cassette from the look of it. Why don't I stop off at Arnie's and have a dubbing made of it?
Yeah, is there time?
If I go right now...
See you later, Lil.
What happened to your lip, by the way?
Oh, a slight misunderstanding last night.
What misunderstanding?
An altercation with an irate husband.
Ballinger, you're a natural-born lowlifer.
Yeah, the broad was married. What was she doing in a swingles bar? Anyway, you should see the husband.
Oh, I'm sure he'll think twice before he interferes with his wife again. Did you have time to look at the file?
I got about halfway through it in the taxi.
All right, fill me in.
Right. Well, Fred Cooper went to his eternal reward about 10 p.m. October 7th last year. That was a Sunday.
That's right. Didn't the paper say three 22 caliber slugs in the chest?
According to the coroner's report, the first one was fired from a few feet away. They found the slug in his left lung. The other two were fired at close range. They went through his heart and into the rug. So the first one knocked him down. The other two nailed him to the floor permanently.
Killer meant business.
He sure did.
Well, it takes some doing to shoot a man and walk over and put two slugs in him. Sounds like I hate killing.
Shooting a man even once is no expression of affection.
I mean, it might let out a cold-blooded pro. Although the caliber does that, doesn't it?
Well, I'd have said so, although homicide disagrees. I don't see a hitman using anything smaller than the .38, do you?
No trace of the weapon, was there?
No, and nothing was taken. The investigating officer, and that's Briggs himself, found $80 in change on the body and a bunch of credit cards. Plus, he was wearing an $800 wristwatch, none of which was taken.
Fred Cooper's wristwatch cost $800?
Yeah?
Mine cost $14.
Fred had a wife, did you know that? They lived in this high-rise over near Church in Maitland. His wife was out of town at the time. She'd gone to the cottage with her parents. Mr. and Mrs. Charles Tinsley?
Whose cottage?
Mummy's and Daddy's, I think.
When?
When what?
When did she go to the cottage with the old folks?
According to the testimony, her parents came around to the apartment to get her at 9:30 Sunday evening. That's about half an hour before Fred went on his big trip.
Who found the body?
They did.
The wife and the in-laws? When?
Next morning, around 11.
How come?
And that's when they got back.
They leave for the country 9:30 Sunday evening, come back Monday morning at 11. That's some weekend.
It's a farmhouse. They just went to turn it off for the winter.
Oh, it's a farmhouse.
About 80 miles away. According to the testimony, they spent the night there.
Are Mr. and Mrs. Charles Tinsley the Mr. and Mrs. Charles Tinsley I think they are?
The same?
Well, what was a nightcrawler like Fred Cooper doing up in that league?
Maybe it's a love story?
Yeah, maybe it's cheeseburger with mustard and relish. I mean, we're talking about one of the Tinsley girls, Bellinger. Now, if you told me she'd married the manager of a bank, I'd want to know why not the president.
Maybe she got in with the wrong crowd.
She sure did. Well, how come Fred didn't go to the country with his wife?
It seems the in-laws found him about as enchanting as carbuncles. I guess his charm just didn't work on the old man.
Yeah, Mr. Tinsley could probably read him like a book printed on glass pages, which might give the old man a motive.
He's also got a perfect alibi.
Ballangino, perfect alibis always give me a funny feeling. You ever notice how an innocent party seldom has a perfect alibi? They've always been to a movie, alone, or they can't remember. Anyway, what else?
That's as far as I got.
What's on a cassette?
Dance music, maybe? We can have a tango. You tango, O'Brien?
No, I'm better at the waltz. If it's a tango you want, why don't you try Lillian?
Now, class, the majority of real murders are nothing more than accidents of passion. The motives are nearly always the same. Stress, frustration, despair, rage, all leading to a sudden volcanic release of tension.
Are you saying that they have no literary merit, Professor Bradford?
Oh, not at all, McAllister. A study of the forces leading up to them can produce stunning works of art. Now, your assignment is an exercise in plot, plot, and then more plot. And I recommend a strongly motivated, premeditated murder. Pit a clever criminal against a clever investigator. You see, there's something really fascinating about watching a mind at work. Watch any detective story and notice how your interest flags when the mind exits from the scene. Then, observe how your interest quickens when the detective begins to apply his mind to the solution of the mystery. Ha ha ha, you think, now we are getting somewhere.
Then the most interesting program would be where you watched a real-life detective at work, wouldn't it?
Oh, no, wrong, McAllister, wrong, wrong, wrong. It's not the faithful reproduction of life that fascinates, but the clever imitation of life. Remember, art is the first syllable of artificiality.
What are you having, O'Brien?
I don't know. What are you having?
I don't know. I guess I have a lean smoked meat sandwich with coleslaw.
I get so sick of having the same thing day in, day out. Is that all they got?
Have the minute steak.
$2.85 for a bit of fried shoe leather.
There's corned beef and cabbage for $3.50.
Oh, cabbage.
Here's Lil.
Hi. I got a copy of the file. The dubbing will be ready till 1:30.
Well, how come?
Arnie says he has to do it in real time.
What other kind is it?
He means he can't do it at high speed. It's only two tracks, by the way. Hey, what's everybody having?
Well, Bellinger's having a lean smoked meat with coleslaw. I haven't decided yet.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. A lean smoked meat sandwich with coleslaw, please.
I'll have the same. Two leans with coal. What about you, sir?
Oh, well, I'll have the same.
Brian's having another adventure in gourmet dining. Yeah.
Three leans with coal.
Well, did you have a chance to look through the file, did you?
Yes, and guess what?
What?
The cassette is a recording of the murder.
The cassette is a recording of the murder?
What do you mean the cassette is a recording of the murder?
The machine was running when it happened. Isn't that fantastic?
And the killer didn't see it?
It was in the living room.
What was Fred recording?
He was just trying it out. Anyway, according to the file, the murder happened at 5 seconds after 10.
Wait a minute, five seconds after 10? That's timing it pretty close.
The Coopers had this dumb cuckoo clock. It strikes 10 and 5 seconds later...
You mean the whole thing's on tape?
According to the file.
And they couldn't identify the killer's voice?
The killer doesn't say anything.
What, not a peep?
Not a word.
Well, the sooner we hear the tape, the better.
Well, it won't be ready until 1:30.
In the meantime, here comes lunch.
Yeah, the sooner we choke this down, the better. Hey, here's something, Bellinger.
What's that?
There might have been some hanky-panky going on. Looks like the wife could have had a boyfriend.
What boyfriend?
This, quote, friend of the family's, unquote. They saw a lot of them. Single, unattached, always dropping in. Could be something there.
Buddy of Cooper's?
No, that's just it. Way out of his class. Name of Luke Bradford.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I think I got his statement here.
Professor of English Literature?
At the university, right.
Right.
Now remember, in building your outline class, your criminal must have three attributes. Motive, opportunity, and capability.
Sir, what do you mean by capability?
Well, let's consider them in the order named. First, motive. This is the reason for the crime. Second, opportunity. Your villain must be in a position to commit the crime, to gain access to his victim. And finally, capability. The murderer must have the means at his disposal, whether in the form of a weapon, poison, superior physical strength, or whatever. It's no use revealing in your last paragraph that the victim, a strapping 200-pounder, was strangled by his diminutive, bedridden spouse in a burst of maniacal rage.
She might shoot him, though.
True, but being bedridden, where did she get the gun?
Or poison him?
But being bedridden, where did she get the poison?
Maybe she could tamper with her reading lamp and electrocute him.
Ah, by making sure he's standing in a bath full of water.
But you make murder sound almost impossible to commit, Professor Bradford.
Not impossible, but not easy either.
I read one where the woman murdered her husband by leaving a pot of milk on the stove. The milk boiled over, put out the flame, and he died of gas.
Well, that was set in England some time ago, but it wouldn't work now, would it?
Why not?
Well, we use natural gas. It's not poisonous.
Okay, Lillian, you ready with the tape?
Yes.
Let's put this thing into context.
Okay. It's Sunday evening, October 7th, 10 p.m. Cooper's alone in the apartment.
House lights down, curtain up, on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness a murder.
Go.
You mean that's it?
That's it.
That's all?
Yes, sir. The rest of track one is just ambient noises. Track two is blank. Oh, wasn't that spooky? The murderer is standing right there. You can almost see him.
And he doesn't make a sound.
Or she doesn't make a sound. What are the ambient noises?
Just sounds in the building and traffic down the street.
And track two is clean.
The recorder ran to the end of track one and then turned itself off automatically.
What sort of sounds from the rest of the building?
Footsteps, running water.
Upstairs?
Next door, the lady was having a bath.
That sounds like a nice lady.
She's a call girl.
But a clean call girl.
It's Lucy. Her statement's in the file.
Not our Lucy.
The same?
Our Lucy?
She was before your time, Lillian.
You mean she had my job?
No, relax. We used her on divorce cases back in the bad old days.
Oh, for a moment you had me worried.
Right. Now let's tie up the loose ends and get this thing into focus. Bellinger, I want you to go over to the university and have a word with this Professor Bradford. Lillian, I want you to come with me.
Where to, Mr. O'Brien?
We're going to pay a call on an old friend of ours.
Say hello for me.
Right.
Yeah?
Hello, Lucy.
She's not here.
It's me, Lucy. O'Brien.
You're early. Look, come back in an hour. I can't work before breakfast. Who sent you?
Lucy, it's O'Brien. Remember?
Who's your friend? I don't do kinky stuff.
Lillian's my secretary.
Oh, yeah.
She's just here to take notes.
Any photographs? Photographs are extra.
No photographs, just notes.
Notes are extra, too. Oh, geez, it must be the middle of the night.
It's 2 p.m.
Oh, don't you ever go to bed, honey.
Come in, Lillian. Shut the door.
Yes, sir. She doesn't even remember you, Mr. O'Brien.
The wages of sin is oblivion.
Well, what do you want to do, dearie? Just sit in a chair and watch?
We don't want any action, Lucy. We just want to talk to you.
All right. How does it go?
I'm investigating a homicide.
Oh, that's good. And if I don't tell you who did it, you'll hurt me. But in the end, I surrender. Is that it? Well, he's got imagination. I'll say that for him.
This is legit. Here's my ID.
You mean you're for real?
Straight as a street.
I don't know from any homicide, honey.
The Cooper case.
What case?
Cooper. Fred Cooper. Used to live next door in 1709.
Never heard of him.
They were your neighbors for a year.
The building's full of neighbors. I don't know them either.
Would a 20 help?
Not like a 50 would.
All right, but for 50, I want all you know.
In advance. Not that I don't trust you.
In advance.
Thanks, honey. Who were you talking about?
Cooper. Fred Cooper.
Oh, Cooper. I thought you said Hooper.
No, Cooper.
He used to live next door.
That's right.
In 1709.
Yep.
Sure, Fred Cooper. He got murdered, you know.
I know.
Well, what about him?
You tell me.
Well, what is it to tell? He used to live next door.
Lucy.
Why?
I know they used to live next door. I told you they used to live next door.
That's right, they did. And he got iced.
I want you to tell me something I don't know, like who did it.
A hero.
What hero?
Fred Cooper came up from out of the drain pipe.
You didn't like him?
Well, I liked him. Why shouldn't I like him? I wasn't married to him, but as a husband, he was a rat.
All right, let's get back to the hero.
What hero?
The one who killed Fred.
Who was it?
The one you were telling us about.
I don't know who killed Fred.
Lucy, we're out of step. Put it another way. Did you see or hear anything the night of the murder?
I noticed it was quiet. He didn't beat her up for a change.
He used to beat her up?
Like clockwork, dearie. I could hear them all the way out to the bedroom.
Must have been bad for business.
But why didn't she just walk out on him?
It wasn't that simple. Margot was a user and he was her source.
Drugs?
Fred used to work at the campus and she was a student. She wanted a taste of life and Fred gave it to her through the point of a needle.
And then married her?
When he found out who she was. They ran off together in a high and got married in Buffalo.
And Fred figured he'd step right into high society.
Until her old man found out who he was.
And Fred found himself out in the cold and turned ugly. And she killed him.
No way, honey. I've seen her shoe a fly out the window rather than swat it. She'd come in here with a thick lip or a black eye and blame herself for making Fred lose his temper.
She loved him.
She loved him, she loved him, she hated him, she loved him, she respected him, she despised him. He was her husband, that was the big thing. She was his property. I liked her. She was nice, but was she dumb about men?
You must have felt like killing Fred yourself at times, just as a favor to her.
Don't get any funny ideas. Fred was her problem. I had my own.
Well, a woman in a situation like that, though, should be just about ripe for a boyfriend, wouldn't you say?
I know I would.
Some nice, understanding guy, give her a bit of affection, consideration, prop up her ego?
Maybe, if Mr. Wright came along.
That's what I'm asking you. Did Mr. Wright come along?
She didn't say.
What about Luke Bradford?
Bradford?
Professor Luke Bradford.
Oh, sure. She was always talking about him.
Could he be Mr. Wright?
He was one of her teachers.
Teachers have been known to fancy their students.
She's 20. He must be 40. Of course, that doesn't mean anything.
Did he drop in a lot?
Quite a lot, now that you mention it.
When Fred was out.
Yeah, but then Fred was out boozing most of the time.
Did Fred know him?
Oh, yeah. You see, this professor was trying to get her to go back and finish her degree. At least that's what she told me.
And I guess that's what she told Fred, huh? Well, thanks, Lucy.
Anytime, honey.
I'd like to ask a question. Have you seen her since it happened?
Nope. From what I hear, she had a breakdown. They put her in the funny farm. Maybe she's still there. She never showed up around here again. That professor might know.
Ah, your health, sir. Cheers, Professor Bradford. Well, now, what were we talking about?
Well, you see, the thing is, we're looking for a motive.
Oh, beautiful, sir.
Well, it's like seeing the textbook translated into action. Motive first. Precisely what I was telling my students. And, Mr. Bellinger, would you be willing to address my class?
Thanks all the same, but it's not my bag, you know what I mean? I get nervous and forget everything I meant to say. Well, Mr. Bryan might be interested.
Oh.
Anyway, the thing is, you got any idea who might have wanted to see Fred out of the way, sir?
Well, would you believe almost anyone who knew him?
Including you?
Well, especially me.
Uh-huh.
Yes, Fred was a very particular personality type, Mr. Ballinger. To know him was to loathe him, and I loathed him with every fiber of my being.
Well...
Oh, and I'm proud of it. I think I'm a better man for my loathing of Fred Cooper. I should certainly hate to be the sort of man who could like him. So I drink to his exterminator. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Why did you personally hate him, Prof?
I've loathed him for the systematic and methodical way he set about destroying a very beautiful girl. His wife, one of the best students I ever had.
So you had a motive?
Oh, I had motive galore. I had the motive of the devoted teacher who sees that rarest and most precious thing, genuine talent, being trampled underfoot by a monster.
But you were out of town when it happened, I seem to remember.
Oh, with what exquisite, implacable logic you proceed from point to point. First motive, second opportunity. Yes, unhappily, alas, I'm afraid I was some hundreds of miles distant at the time. A great pity. You see, the inexorable truth is that I have a cast-iron alibi.
We're running into a lot of cast-iron alibis lately.
Hail cast-iron. Cheers.
Cheers. Would you take me by the hand and lead me through your alibi, Professor?
Oh, I'd be delighted to. Now, I was at the Coopers on the very evening of the blessed event. I often dropped by to see if I couldn't persuade Margot to take up her studies again. In any case, I left their place at about 7:30 to drive to Montreal, at which time Fred was, I couldn't help but observe to my sorrow, very much alive and well. Mm. I reached my destination some 400 miles away about 6 hours later. Of course, this has all been verified by the police, as you undoubtedly know.
Yes. You go there often?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I graduated there. I have friends and professional contacts down that way.
And you always drive?
Invariably. I like the convenience of having my car with me.
It's a long drive.
Oh, yes, it is.
You approve of murder, Professor Bradford?
In certain cases, yes. Absolutely. But then, so does the law. You've heard of justifiable homicide, Mr. Bellinger. You know, I'm a little surprised that someone should have hired you to solve the case at this late date. I believe the police considered it closed.
The book is never closed on murder, Professor.
Mm-hmm. It would be pointless to ask who your client is, I assume.
Sorry.
Oh, no matter. It isn't hard to guess. Fred had only one living relative, I think, his brother Andy. Poor Andy. I didn't dislike him. He lacked Fred's malignancy. Do you yourself have any idea who it might have been, Mr. Bellinger?
Personally, my money's on the widow.
Margot? Oh, but unless I'm mistaken, she too has a cast-iron alibi.
Yeah, but you know, it's a funny thing about cast-iron, Professor Bradford. It's very strong, but very brittle. One good blow and it cracks right down the middle.
Oh, no.
Oh, what's going on? I keep hearing bells. Oh, what a way to start the day.
Honey, hand me that thing.
No.
Come on, it might be important.
Oh, all right.
Yeah?
Mr. Bellinger, it's Lil.
No, hi.
Are you still in bed?
That's a very personal question, Lil.
Anyway, here's Mr. O'Brien.
Then put him on.
Bellinger?
Yeah?
Are you still in bed?
What is this, O'Brien, an inquisition?
It's 9 o'clock, I'm waiting for you.
Darling, I didn't realize. Give me half an hour.
I'll give you 15 minutes.
Right, boss. I gotta go.
No.
Yeah. Who didn't set the alarm?
I didn't.
Minx?
Brute.
Hello, Bellinger. I'm sorry if the job's intruding on your private life.
That's okay, O'Brien. Just don't let it happen again. Oh, did I tie one on last night?
All right, about Bradford now.
Very, very smart cookie. That guy knows more about our business than we do. It's his hobby.
What's his hobby?
Murder mysteries.
How about just plain murder?
No way.
Would you get a chance to discuss the case with him?
Sure. We got tanked up at the university faculty club. He left town at 7:30 on the evening of the murder. At 1:30, he checked into the Martinez Motel in Montreal. He did the trip in 6 hours, driving a small 68 VW. And the murder happened at 10 p.m., 2.5 hours after Bradford left town. There's no way Bradford could have rubbed out Fred at 10 p.m. and got to Montreal by 1:30 next morning. He's got a perfect alibi.
Well, I'm getting sick of all these perfect alibis. What about motive?
Motive, yes. He admits he did a jig when he heard about Fred. And, yeah, there's something else.
Now, hold it. Hmm? Yes, Lillian?
Andy Cooper's on the line, Mr. O'Brien.
Well, tell him there's nothing to report. We'll call him when we get something.
I think he wants you to drop the case.
Drop the case? What for? We're just getting into it. Tell him to drop into the office.
Yes, sir.
I wonder what all that's about.
Well, we'll find out when he gets here. Now, you were saying.
Well, I just happened to make the acquaintance of one of Bradford's students, a chick.
Oh, yeah.
And we got along like a house of fire.
Yeah, somehow that sounds just like you, Bellinger. And?
Well, there's this big rumor making the rounds of the campus. It seems Professor Bradford's shacking up with a lady.
You mean he's heterosexual?
I mean, the rumor is the lady is Margot Cooper, Fred's widow.
Now, that's the sort of thing I've been waiting to hear. Come on in, Andy. Take a load off.
Mr. O'Brien.
So what's this I hear you want us to drop the case?
Yeah.
Oh, here's Ballinger. You know Andy, don't you, Ballinger?
Sure. Purse snatching, remember?
I remember.
How's the arm?
It's all right.
Heel did it?
Andy tells me to take us off the case, but he hasn't said why yet.
Look, Mr. O'Brien, I don't have to say why. All I have to do is to tell you you're off the case and that's it.
Ooh, I think we just got put in our place, Ballinger.
Let's have another look at that arm, Andy.
Oh, look, lay off, okay, Mr. Ballinger? Lay off. All right. I've been thinking.
We'll let that pass. Now get to the point.
I made a mistake when I hired you.
Now that's not very flattering. We like to think we're the best.
I mean, I can't afford you. I can't scare up two bills a day plus expenses.
You said you could.
Well, I was wrong. I can't.
How come you're so nervous?
Who's nervous?
You're nervous.
I'm not nervous.
You look nervous.
Yeah, well, you make me nervous, Mr. Bellinger.
Why should I make you nervous?
You keep looking at my arm.
Let's see that arm.
Andy, you're not leveling with us. Now, personally, I don't mind. But Bellinger's got this terrible temper. I've spoken to him about it, but it doesn't do any good. When a client doesn't level with us, Bellinger sees red.
I lose my head. I become like a crazed thing.
Lay off, please.
Who got to you?
Nobody. Hey, let go of my arm.
Bellinger, you're so impatient. Now, can't you see he's getting ready to tell us everything?
No, he's not.
Yes, he is.
He's not.
I am. Just let go, okay?
Come on now, Bellinger, let go of his arm. Come on now, okay. All right, simmer down.
Why can't I ever have any fun?
Well, if he clams up again, you can have all the fun you want, all right?
Promise?
Scout's honor. Now, let's have it, Andy.
I had a call.
You had a call. We all get calls. All right, who called you?
I can't tell you. I'll end up in the harbor. Look, I'll pay you a bonus to drop the case, huh?
Tell you what. Clam up and I'll break your arm again. Is it a deal?
Mr. O'Brien, get him away from me, please.
Break his arm.
Eddie Puccini!
Shucks, he went and told us.
Eddie Puccini told you to take us off the case? Why? Now, what's it to him?
Jeez, you don't think I asked, do you, Mr. O'Brien?
All right, Andy, you can go.
But are you off the case?
Beat it.
Okay. It was a real pleasure bumping into you again, Mr. Bellinger.
I enjoyed it.
Bellinger, your basic nature is that of a roughneck.
I guess I was cut from a coarse bit of cloth.
Say, how'd you like to go out to dinner tonight?
Someplace I have to dress for?
La Firenza.
Eddie Puccini's dump. I'll wear my gun.
Well, if it isn't O'Brien.
Mr. O'Brien. Hello, Eddie. Have a seat.
Is there something you want to talk about?
A couple of minor points. First, I got this client, Andy Cooper.
I know
you never heard of him, but I'm electing you to be his guardian. Something happens to him, something happens to you. Clear?
Jeez, you must need an overhaul. You think you can come in here, talk to me like that, and walk home without help? That mouth of yours could get you into a basket.
Yeah, I've been told that before. By Louis Panero. You remember Louis? Used to have all those lovely white teeth.
Oh, boy, are you ever asking for it?
You see that ape sitting over there in the corner? Yeah. Now, you probably thought somebody mislaid his pet gorilla. But that's Bellinger, my partner. He did the dental work on Louis. Would you like to try for a partial plate, Eddie?
All right, already. Yeah. I don't want any trouble. This is a respectable place. Mm-hmm. Anything else?
Yeah, well, I'd ask you who's putting the pressure on you, but I think I've got that figured out for myself. I just don't want anything to happen to my client. He's paying the rent this month.
All right. Why don't you have a nice spaghetti and meatballs on the house and go home to bed?
Yeah, I think I'll have the filet mignon instead. And send Bellinger over, will you? He looks lonely.
All right.
And Eddie.
Yeah?
Make that filet mignon very well done.
You know something, O'Brien? You're a barbarian.
Good morning.
Morning, Dillian. Bellinger in yet?
He called to say he'd be a few minutes late.
He's always a few minutes late. Did you check out Fred Cooper's widow?
Yes, sir. She was in a clinic in Montreal until about 2 weeks ago.
Why Montreal? We got bug houses here.
Maybe to hush up that she was having a little more than a simple nervous breakdown?
Complicated by being a junkie. Where is she now?
I phoned the clinic and they gave me this address on her.
Which by sheer coincidence happens to be the address we've got on Professor Bradford.
That's true.
Right out in the open like that. Now that's what I call self-confidence.
Good morning.
Oh, your timing's perfect. I want to hear that tape again. Bring it over, Lillian.
Yes, sir.
What's the object of the exercise?
I want to prove the impossible, that Fred Cooper was killed by Luke Bradford.
But Professor Bradford was out of town.
In spite of all the witnesses. Consider the situation Sunday evening, about 7:30, October the 7th. There were five people in the apartment. Fred Cooper and his wife, Margot, Mr. and Mrs. Tinsley, her parents, and Luke Bradford. At 7:30, Bradford gets into his car and supposedly sets off for Montreal.
And gets there 6 hours later.
Now, one thing at a time, Lillian. At 7:30, Bradford leaves. At 9:30, Margot and her parents leave. Fred is now alone in the apartment. He decides to fool around with a tape recorder. He turns it on in time to catch the cuckoo clock striking 10. You ready, Lillian?
Ready.
Now, listen to this and tell me who his visitor was if it wasn't Bradford.
Uh-huh.
Well,
I don't know what to say, O'Brien. Sounds like it's got to be Bradford.
Of course it's Bradford. Fred says, The others just left. Now, what others? His wife and her parents. You forget something? Now, what does that mean? That means I thought you were on your way to Montreal, and here you are back. Why? You forget something?
Yeah. Oh, wow, Mr. O'Brien. But how did he do it?
Well, that's what we're going to find out, Lillian. Bellinger, I want you to go to Montreal.
Right.
By car.
It's a long drive.
In a small VW.
I knew you were going to say that.
In the meantime, Lillian and I are going to go over that file with a fine-tooth comb because the answer has to be in there somewhere. Put the coffee on, Lillian, and let's get to work.
Well, let's face it, Mr. O'Brien. The harder we try to break down the professor's alibi, the better it stands up. He just didn't have the opportunity.
All right, convince me.
Well, he's got eyewitness testimony to his presence here at 7:30 and to his arrival there 6 hours later. Oh. The clerk at the motel checked him in at 1:30 and the barman saw him. But for me, the clincher is that traffic ticket he picked up on his way into Montreal. The night clerk and the barman might be wrong about the time, even an hour wrong, but he got this ticket at 1:10 a.m., Monday, October 8th. He just had to be there.
Oh, he was there, all right. But that ticket bothers me.
Why? Jumped a red light at 1 o'clock in the morning? Could happen to anybody, especially after a long drive.
Well, it still bothers me. Now, is that his motel bill there?
Mm-hmm, yes, here it is.
All right, let's go over that just once more.
All right, let's see. Room 311, Luke Bradford. Arrival October 8th, departure October 8th. He checked out in the afternoon.
Right.
Rate, $38.50. He paid with his American Express card. Let's see, what charges? Room, $38.50. C shop, 80 cents. Coffee shop, I guess. Mm-hmm. Bar, $11.50. Total, $50.80.
And that courtesy bit at the bottom?
The garage, here we are. Make of car, VW, license EKU 474, mechanic HM. And then there's just the list of the things they automatically check.
Yeah, would you read them, please?
Tires okay, oil okay, gas okay, battery fill, brakes okay, windshield washer okay, wash yes.
Okay. Now, somewhere, Lillian, something's wrong and I can't put my finger on it. I'll tell you what, let's go back to the traffic ticket. Now, where's that street map of the city and district of Montreal?
Here.
All right. Now, he jumped the light here at the intersection of Victoria and Queen Mary Road. Do you know Montreal?
No.
Well, neither do I. But now, looking at this map, if you wanted to get to the Martinez Hotel at Guy and Dorchester... Now, wouldn't it make more sense to stay on DeCary Boulevard here and go right down into the center of the city? Why come off at DeCary here at the Queen Mary Road exit and drive all the way through town?
Unless you wanted to get a traffic ticket to prove you were there at a certain time. Is that what you mean?
And why would you want to prove you were there unless you knew you were going to have to prove you were there?
Yes, sir. But the fact remains, he was there.
I know, I know, I know. Hello, O'Brien.
Hi.
Hey, you in Montreal?
Yeah, what are you doing?
Washing the dishes. Wait a minute. Turn the radio off. Okay, shoot.
If you were married, O'Brien, you'd have a wife to do the dishes for you.
Yeah, well, that's some price to pay for a couple of clean plates. Now, when'd you get there?
About an hour ago. It took me just under 6 hours.
You went the way Bradford described in a statement?
Straight down the 401. It's the only way to do it.
And Bradford made one stop and one stop only. At a service center near Kingston for gas.
Right.
Well, how far did you make it?
I clocked it at just under 400 miles from the corner of Church and Maitland to the motel.
Could you have done it in 4.5 hours?
No way, boss. My foot down to the floor. My top speed was 80.
That's what I figured. All right, you can turn the car in down there and fly back.
See you tomorrow, Brian.
Good night, Bellinger.
Hi, good people.
Welcome back to Upper Canada.
Hey, did you have a nice trip?
Well, I had a trip. Here's my expense sheet.
$43.50 for a room?
That's some ritzy motel, let me tell you.
He's sleeping in $43.50 room and I'm eating $1.10 lunches.
Let's face it, some people live better than other people.
All right, let's see. Room $43.50, coffee shop $0.80, L-dist $1.85. What's L-dist?
Long distance?
Oh, right. He called me home last night. GA-457. GA?
Gasoline. Now, they got this courtesy service where the garage checks out your car. They went ahead and filled the tank without asking.
Oh, that's great. So you donated 7 gallons of gas. I hope they appreciated it. All right, what about that traffic ticket Bradford got?
Now, to get that, he had to get off the expressway about 5 miles too soon. I guess he could have taken the wrong exit by mistake.
It was no mistake. Did you check out the clinic?
Where they put Mrs. Cooper to get rid of the bugs? Yeah, classy. She was an addict. Heroin. By the time they booked her in, she was strung way out.
Well, who booked her in?
Her parents. The story about the nervous breakdown was for her mother's sake. But her father knew what it was really all about. Took them 5 months to dry her out.
Did she have any visitors?
Mommy moved down to Montreal and stayed there. Daddy came to see her on weekends.
Anyone else?
Bradford.
That figures.
Brian, the way I see it, we're up against a conspiracy of silence. Our client, Andy, got the word to lay off from Eddie Puccini. But who pressured Eddie? Briggs in homicide? But who could pressure Briggs? City councilor? The mayor? The way I see it, there's a direct line of pressure that ends with you and me. Goes through our client, the mob, homicide, city hall. and starts with no less a big wheel than Mr. Charles Tinsley himself.
I'll buy that.
Are you saying that Mr. Tinsley shot Fred?
No, Lillian. Professor Bradford shot Fred.
Once he gets his teeth into a theory, he can't let go.
Mr. O'Brien, what proof have you got?
The only proof I've got is that Professor Bradford didn't drive to Montreal.
What?
Well, it's right here in a comparison between Bradford's motel bill and Bellinger's. Have you got Bradford's bill, Lillian?
Yes, sir. It's right here in the file somewhere. Yeah, here it is.
All right. Okay, now look at the charges. Take Bellinger's first. Room 4350, coffee shop 80 cents, long distance 185, gas 457, for a total of $50.72.
Yes.
All right, now Bradford's. Room 3850, coffee shop 80, bar 1150, for a total of $50.80.
A difference of 8 cents. I don't get it.
Ballinger?
Wait a minute.
Huh?
Wait a minute, you're right, O'Brien.
What's a difference of 8 cents got to do with anything?
Ballinger, you said Professor Bradford wanted me to address his class.
Well, he really wanted me, but I said he could have you.
Oh, you're all heart, pal. Can you set that up for me this afternoon?
Sure, I guess so, if he's meeting his class today.
Are you going to give a lecture, Mr. O'Brien?
Professor O'Brien, Lillian. Professor O'Brien.
Class, we are very fortunate today in having with us a genuine professional private investigator and his associates. Mr. O'Brien has agreed to speak to us briefly about the practical side of crime investigation. So it's my pleasure to now give him the floor.
Thank you. Thank you. By and large, the investigative work I do, along with my associates here, is really much less exciting than you probably think. Our work involves a minimum of violence. As you can see, I'm still in full possession of all my teeth. I've never hung from the edge of a tall building or been forced off the road at 90 miles an hour. In the main, a criminal investigation consists of making a lot of telephone calls and knocking at a lot of doors. But not always. Once in a while, you come up against a classic case that puts you to the test and makes all the dull plotting worthwhile. I'd like to describe such a case to you this afternoon. Right. In fact, I understand your assignment for this part of the course is to write a short mystery. Is that so?
Oh, yes. Yes, that's so, Mr. O'Brien. Marks count for the final exam.
Well, I wonder if you'd mark my story for me, Professor Bradford.
With pleasure. It'll be interesting to see how fact stands up against fiction.
Well, that's what I had in mind. This is the story not of a triangle, but of a rectangle. It involves a wife, a husband, a lover, and a father. In connivance with the father, the lover murders the husband.
Excuse me, sir. But Professor Bradford has told us to pay special attention to plausibility. Why didn't she just leave her husband and run off with her lover?
I don't think she even knew she loved her lover until long after it was over. And she couldn't have left her husband in any case. You see, she was a heroin addict and he was her source of supply. How am I doing, Professor?
Go on, Mr. O'Brien.
He was a small-time pusher who, by a stroke of blind luck, hooked a girl from one of the best families in town. Heroin held her to him, and heroin was to be his introduction into high society. The lover approached her father, put him in the picture, and together they decided to murder the husband. How am I doing for motive, Professor?
Good.
All right, now one evening, the four principals plus the girl's mother gathered together at the apartment. Let's call it a Sunday in, let's say October. Five people are present. The husband, the wife, her father, her mother, and her secret admirer. Of the five, two are bent on murder, the father and the admirer. One is the intended victim, the husband. The other two, the girl and her mother, are innocent bystanders whose testimony later will exonerate two guilty parties.
Oh, wow.
Now, please listen closely. At 7:30, the admirer gets into his car and sets off to drive to a point 400 miles away. The girl and her mother testify to this. So does the father. But we can discount him since he knows what is about to happen. Next, at 9:30, the girl and both her parents leave to drive to their summer cottage, leaving the husband alone in the apartment. Next, at 10 o'clock, the admirer returns to the apartment, shoots the husband three times at close range, and once again sets off on his journey. Finally, he arrives at his destination 400 miles distant at 1:10 the following morning, where he is careful to go through a stoplight and get a traffic ticket, and where he checks into a certain motel at 1:30 a.m.
Excuse me, sir.
Yeah?
Are you saying he drove 400 miles in a little over 4 hours? I don't see how he left point A at 10 p.m. and got to point B by 1.
Oh, well, that's easy. He flew. How am I doing, Professor Bradford?
He flew, you say?
Right. He bumped off the husband at 10, caught the plane to point B at 11, arrived at midnight, and drove on into town.
Drove? You mean he flew to point B with his car?
No, not with his car. With his license plates. You see, the trick required two identical cars. Same color, same make. It was a very simple stunt to buy a second identical car in Point B, leave it parked at the airport, change plates on arrival, which was conveniently in the dark of night, and finish the trip by car exactly the way it had begun it. How am I doing, Professor? Do I get an A+?
Well, it seems to me that you've left a couple of loose ends, Mr. O'Brien. I'll have to give you an A-. What I mean is, what did he do with the original car? Leave it parked at the first airport with no license plates on it? Someone would have reported it.
Now, he didn't leave it at the airport. He left it in a private garage specially rented for the purpose. He went to the airport by taxi. Now do I get an A+?
Well, I'll give you an A, because to get an A+, the story would have to be perfect. Your investigator has only surmise, inference, and suspicion. The murderer didn't do a thing to give the game away.
Oh, yeah, well, I forgot to tell you about that. You see, we have the killer's sworn statement that he drove to Point B 400 miles away, stopping once at a service center for gas. On the other hand, we have his bill from the motel where he stopped. This motel gives your car a free checkup as a courtesy. The dead giveaway is that if we're to believe the killer's testimony, he drove the second 200 miles of the trip nonstop and arrived with a full tank of gas. A+, Professor? What are you having, Ballinger?
I don't know. What are you having?
I don't know. What are you having, Lillian?
A smoked meat sandwich with coleslaw. Here's the girl.
Yes?
One lean with coal, please.
I have the same.
Yeah, same for me.
You're a creature of habit, Mr. O'Brien.
Well, like Professor Bradford. He bought the cover-up car, then automatically filled it with gas out of habit. It just never occurred to him that after driving 200 miles, the tank would be nearly empty.
I feel sorry for him. Everything he and Mr. Tinsley did was inspired by their love for a woman. And now...
Now? Nothing's changed, Lillian.
We couldn't turn him in even if we wanted to, Lil. Everything would come down on us like a ton of bricks.
Briggs would fire Eileen, and Ballinger would have to marry her. We can classify it as a case of justifiable homicide.
Or a case of conspiracy of silence.
Or a case of love conquers all.